Pull up a chair, let me pour you some of this coffee. Because it's early yet, and the sun's just now burning the dew off the grass out here on the flight line, you hear that? Somewhere off to the south, an engine winding up. Then snapping quiet, then winding up again. Somebody practicing before the crowds get thick. That sound right there is the reason I fell in love with all of this. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Taildragger, and you're listening to The Hangar, and I'm not in a studio today. I'm sitting on a folding chair at Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, smack in the middle of EAA AirVenture, with about 500,000 of my closest friends and more airplanes than you could count in a week. And today I want to tell you about a man who used to make an airplane dance right over this very field. A quiet fella from Ohio who flew airliners for a living and rewrote the whole sport of aerobatics on his days off. His name was Leo Laudenslager. And if you don't know that name, stay with me, because you know his airplane, even if you've never heard of him. Now, before we get into it, let me tell you today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, your first solo, your private, your instrument rating, all the way up the ladder. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it, and every one of those coins tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Speaking of stories, picture Oshkosh back in the middle 1970s. Same grass, same smell of cut hay, and 100 low lead and bratwurst on a grill somewhere. The Experimental Aircraft Association, the EAA, had brought its big convention up here from Rockford, and it was already turning into the greatest aviation gathering on Earth. And into that crowd, into the afternoon air show slot, comes a white monoplane with a big radial-looking cowl and a paint scheme that could sunburn your eyeballs. A single-seat low-wing airplane called the Laser 200. At the controls, a slim, serious man with a mustache and the calm hands of somebody who flew heavy iron for a paycheck. Because that's exactly what he was. Here's the thing about Leo Laudenslager that I love. He was not some full-time daredevil living out of a duffel bag. Leo was an airline captain. He flew for Northwest Airlines, straight and level, gear down, flaps on schedule, hundreds of souls behind him, the most buttoned-up flying there is. And then he'd go home to New Jersey, and he'd climb into a little airplane he had rebuilt with his own two hands, and he would turn the sky inside out. Now here's where it gets interesting. Leo didn't start with some purpose-built factory rocket. He started with an airplane called a Stevens Acro. Good design for its day. A clean little monoplane. But Leo looked at it the way a hot rodder looks at a stock engine. He saw everything it could be, and everything it wasn't yet. So he took it apart, and I mean he really took it apart, down to the tubing. He shortened it. He reshaped it. He moved weight around, cleaned up the aerodynamics, lightened everything that could be lightened, and stiffened everything that needed to hold together when he pulled and pushed the kind of loads that would make your average airframe file for divorce. By the time he was done, it wasn't a Stevens Acro anymore. It was something new. He called it the Laser 200, and understand, he didn't do this in some sponsored factory with a team of engineers in white coats. He did it in a hangar nights and weekends, between trips, the way so many of the best things in aviation get built. The way half the airplanes parked around me here at Oshkosh got built, by somebody who couldn't buy exactly what they wanted, so they made it. That's the EAA spirit right there. That's the whole reason this place exists. Guys and gals in garages and hangars deciding that the rulebook on what an airplane can be was written in pencil, not ink. Leo fit right in. Now, let me tell you what he did with that airplane, because this is the part that still gives me chills. Back in those days, championship aerobatics had a certain look to it. A lot of it came out of the great European and Soviet schools. Beautiful, precise, flowing flying. Big graceful loops and rolls, one figure melting into the next, smooth as pouring cream. It was gorgeous. And it won contests. Leo looked at all that grace and said, in effect, what if we made it violent? Not sloppy, never sloppy. This man was an airline captain, remember? Precision was in his bones, but he brought a sharpness to it that people hadn't quite seen. Snap rolls that cracked like a whip, tumbling gyroscopic figures where the airplane seemed to lose its mind and then find it again exactly on heading. Transitions so abrupt it looked like the film was skipping. He flew angry and precise at the same time, and it was mesmerizing. The judges noticed. Boy, did they notice. Between the middle 1970s and the early 80s, Leo Laudenslager won the United States National Aerobatic Championship 7 times. 7. Nobody had ever done that. To this day, that record stands like a mountain, 7 national titles in that little airplane he built himself. And in 1980, he went over to the World Aerobatic Championship and he beat the world. World champion, an American airline pilot in a home built, standing on top of a sport the Europeans and the Soviets had owned for a generation. Let that sink in. Now I want to slow down here, because it's easy to rattle off trophies like I'm reading a phone book, and Leo deserves better than that. Imagine what it actually took. He's flying full airline schedules, long days, time zones, weather, the whole grind you veterans out there know in your bones. and then on his own time, on his own dime, he's maintaining and refining and flying this airplane to a standard where a tenth of a point, a few degrees of heading off, on the downline is the difference between winning and going home. He would fly practice sessions over and over, the same sequence, chasing perfection that doesn't exist, getting closer to it than almost anybody ever has. Pulling positive G until the blood drained toward his feet and the edges of his vision went gray. Then shoving negative G until the blood pooled in his head and his eyes felt like they'd pop, the dirt from the cockpit floor floating up past his face, the belts digging into his shoulders holding him in his seat. That is brutal, punishing work. Your body does not want to do that. And he did it until it looked effortless. That's the secret nobody tells you about the greats. The effortless part is the most expensive part. You know, sitting here at Oshkosh, I can practically see it. The afternoon air show, the crowd line packed, 10 deep along the fence, kids up on dad's shoulders, and this white laser comes screaming down the runway heading, snaps into a vertical climb, and just detonates into a sequence of maneuvers so fast your brain can't keep up with your eyes. And here's a detail I love. When Leo painted that airplane up in its most famous scheme, it carried the Bud Light colors, Bud Light Laser. It became one of the first really big corporate-sponsored airshow acts, and Leo was smart about it. He understood that airshow flying wasn't just sport, it was show business, and a sponsor could pay for the fuel and the freedom to keep pushing. He helped turn the airshow performer from a barnstorming gypsy into a professional. He raised the whole game. The pay, the polish, the safety standards, the way an act was put together. A lot of what you'll see on this flight line this week, the modern professional airshow, has Leo's fingerprints on it. Now here's the part that connects it all together, and it's the part I most want you to remember. You've all heard of Sean D. Tucker, one of the greatest airshow pilots who ever lived, flew for decades, thrilled millions, right here at Oshkosh, more times than anybody can count. That bright red biplane tumbling and spinning until you're sure it's out of control.
Well, the airplane Sean Tucker made famous grew directly out of Leo Loudenslager's laser. The lineage runs right through Leo's hangar. The ideas, the aggressive style, the whole notion of what a purpose-built aerobatic airplane and a professional airshow act could be. Leo lit that fuse, so when you watch the modern greats out here bending the sky, you're watching Leo's grandchildren fly, every one of them. Let me tell you how the story turns, because it takes a hard turn. And I won't pretty it up. Leo Loudenslager survived a career of the most dangerous flying there is. All those years of snap rolls and tumbles and low-level passes where the margin is measured in feet and heartbeats. He walked away from all of it. And then in the autumn of 1997, Leo was riding a motorcycle, and he was in a crash, and he did not survive it. He was 53 years old. 53. There's a hard lesson in that for all of us, and it's got nothing to do with airplanes. The man who tamed the most violent flying on Earth was taken by an ordinary road on an ordinary day. Life doesn't always let you pick the risk that gets you. All the more reason to be grateful for every single hour we get up there in the blue. But here's what I don't want you to walk away thinking. Don't walk away sad. Because Leo's still here in the best way. His airplane, that Laser 200, the very machine he built with his hands and flew to 7 national titles and a world championship. It hangs today in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. Hangs there in the light with the other legends, a home built, a backyard project by an airline pilot from New Jersey, up there in the National Collection where the whole country can look up and see it. Think about that the next time somebody tells you an amateur can't build something that matters, and his style, his standards, his whole idea of what's possible. That's flying over my head right now, all week long, in the hands of pilots who may never have met him but owe him more than they'll ever know. That's immortality, friends, not the marble kind. The kind where the thing you love keeps happening in the sky after you're gone.
Now here's a thought for the student pilots listening, and I mean this. You might hear a story like Leo's and think, well, that's a different species of human. I could never. Wrong. Dead wrong. Leo Loudenslager started out exactly like you, a person who wanted to fly and then decided to get good at it, and then decided to get a little better than that, one flight at a time. There's no magic. There's just showing up over and over and caring about the tenth of a degree, same as it ever was. Back when Avigus was cheap and airspace was free, and today too, the recipe hasn't changed a bit. So this week, if you're lucky enough to be here at Oshkosh or any air show anywhere, and a single-seat monoplane rolls out for its slot and turns the afternoon inside out, you tip your cap to Leo, you tell the kid on your shoulders, hey, there was a fella named Loudenslager who built an airplane in his hangar and beat the whole world with it. Pass it on, that's how a legend stays alive. My thanks today to the folks at the Experimental Aircraft Association, whose grounds I'm sitting on, and whose history keeps this story breathing, and to the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, where you can go stand under Leo's laser yourself and see it with your own eyes. You can find us anytime at radiohanger.com. I'm Taildragger. That engine's winding up again out south there, so I'm gonna go watch Keep the Blue Side Up, and I'll see you on the flight line.